Welcome to the Banega Swasth India podcast. Our focus is on creating a holistic and healthy India for each and every one. Our goal is Lakshya Sampurna Swasthika, where citizens, individuals, society, and governments work together to ensure health for all. Today on our special episode, we will be discussing about malaria and the risk associated with the disease. World Health Organization tags malaria as a life-threatening disease. It states that the disease is mostly found in tropical countries and it is both preventable and curable. In 2021, nearly half of the world's population was at risk of malaria. There was an estimated 247 million cases of malaria worldwide. The estimated number of malaria deaths stood at 6,19,000, according to the statistics shared by World Health Organization. As per the WHO's World Malaria Report 2022, Southeast Asia region accounted for about 2% of the burden of malaria cases globally, out of which India was responsible for 79% of cases, 83% of all malaria deaths. To discuss more about the disease, where does India stand and how far are we from achieving our 2030 goals of zero malaria, we speak with Dr. Neeraj Dhingra, former director, National Vector-Borne Disease Control Program and member WHO Strategic and Technical Advisory Group on Neglected Tropical Diseases, and Dr. Ajay Agarwal, Director Medicine, Fortis Hospital, Noida. Thank you, Dr. Dhingra and Dr. Agarwal, for joining us. Talking first about malaria, Dr. Agarwal, if you can tell us how serious a health threat is malaria.
Malaria has always been a very serious health threat in India. However, it has progressively declined and now we do not have so much incidences of malaria as we used to have in the past.
Dr. Agarwal, if you can explain what are the effective preventive measures and treatment currently available for malaria?
You see, to prevent malaria, we have to prevent the vector that spreads the malaria, that is the Anopheles mosquito. So we have to decrease the breeding of the mosquito. So we have to use repellents, we have to cover the water bodies with kerosene such that the larva is not allowed to proliferate. We have to kill mosquito breeding, so that way we can prevent malaria. As far as prophylaxis, for the people who are traveling to the endemic zone of the malaria, we have some tablets which we can give weekly such that they do not acquire malaria while they are traveling. Similarly, there are various treatment we have got for the malaria. In most common drug that we use is chloroquine, and for the chloroquine resistant malaria that is very endemic in our country, then we have to use other artisanate based treatment. So there we have a different forms of treatment.
Talking about symptoms, Dr. Agarwal, if you can highlight what are some of the lesser known symptoms of malaria that one should watch out for?
Malaria, as we all know, can cause high grade fever, chills, rigors, recurrent loose motions, vomiting, etc. However, the lesser known symptoms of malaria, I will say for the past my almost 3 decades of my practice, I have seen various forms. I have seen patient only presenting with severe pain in abdomen, only presenting with loose motions, recurrent vomiting, we call ancient malaria. Patient presenting with renal failure, kidney shutdown. Patient presenting with only severe liver failure. Patients presenting with, even cases have been reported with, heart attacks.
Lastly, if you can explain, how does one differentiate between malaria and dengue, since both these diseases have identical symptoms?
Malaria and dengue, as we all know, that is, both are vector-borne disease. Malaria spreads by the Anopheles mosquito, that usually bites in the night time. You see, and dengue is typically with the Aedes mosquito, that is a daytime mosquito. The symptoms vary. In the dengue, usually get a very high fever, continuous fever, associated sometimes with rashes, recurrent loose motions, vomiting. There's a
use the symptoms of the dengue fever. In the malaria, you get intermittent. Sometimes in between the fever, there is no fever in between. The temperature is totally normal. That is intermittent fever. And you, the liver enzyme get elevated later. While in the dengue, you may have initial presentation of the high liver enzyme. And platelet counts falls more rapidly in dengue rather than in the malaria. Both you can get. But this is how you can differentiate between them clinically. But sometimes the symptoms are same, as I told you earlier also. In the malaria, you also can have pain abdomen, loose motions, vomiting with high grip fever. In the dengue also, you can get the both. So then the blood test, of course, we have got the different tests. For the malaria, you do for the malaria parasite. You look in the smear, you do for the, can go for the antigen test. In similar, in the dengue, you can get, go for the antigen and antibody test, ELISA test and the PCR test. That's how you can distinguish between them.
Banega Swasth India podcast will be back after a short break.
Watch out for the Banega Swasth India video podcast Swasthya Mantra, the first ever health and hygiene podcast. It's launching on 5th of May, that's World Hand Hygiene Day, on Spotify, Apple and YouTube in English and in Hindi.
Welcome back to Banega Swasth India podcast. Moving the discussion ahead, now we are joined with Dr. Dhingra. Thank you so much. Doctor, looking at the global status, where do we stand as a nation? What plan of action does India have to put an end to malaria in another 7 years?
India has done great, very well by reducing malaria to the extent of 90% since 2015. And if you look at, India is supposed to end or eliminate malaria by 2027. And then sustain it for 3 years. So by 2030, if you look today, India is definitely poised for elimination if it continues with the strategies that are there. And definitely, it will need changes in the strategy because it will mean from control to elimination. When I say control to elimination, I mean the focus will shift from reducing malaria, which is already reduced, is sustaining malaria. So that it does not, and also detecting outbreaks early and taking immediate preventive measures for any outbreaks. Also, it would need increasing the surveillance in the country to detect any rise, even small rise in a, let's say not a district, but we may say light in a village which was not reporting malaria, and suddenly there are cases reported. The detection has to be very fast and on to be real time. And all measures need to be taken.
Dr. Dhingra, so far, what strategies have helped India to contain malaria?
The first thing is, if the person has got fever, immediately should be tested. And the test can be done by means what we call as rapid diagnostic test, which gives results by strip test within 15 minutes, or even by microscopy. And then if found positive, based on the parasite which is present in the blood, the treatment is given immediately. This is one, what we call as early detection and treatment. Strategy number two looks into the control of the vectors. When we say vectors, we mean the mosquitoes which are transmitting the malaria needs to be taken care. The strategy for them is by means, conventional was by means of indoor residual spray, which was being done by means of DDT and synthetic pyrethroid, which is sprayed inside the houses. In the recent years, India has introduced what we call the long-lasting insecticide nets across the country, which are given free of cost in all high endemic areas where the malaria is. Now, these insecticide nets contain a chemical on their own, and once given, it can be used for 3 years. There are other strategies which include, for example, the surveillance. Surveillance means detecting the fever cases, immediately giving them treatment, and also following up, looking into if there are, how this person got malaria, and are there any other malaria cases in that area. And based on that, take actions that other people don't get malaria also.
Coming to my next question, Dr. Dhingra, where does India stand for eliminating malaria according to the National Framework for malaria elimination, NFME 2016-2030.
There has been a decline in malaria cases by nearly 90% if you compare with 2014-15 data. So there has been a decline, and this decline is equally important because it is affecting both the parasite species, the Vivax and the falciparum. The challenge is now that this needs to be sustained. When I sustain, it means that means one has to look into which areas are still reporting malaria. Now, it may not be as a state level as a whole. It may be district level or it may be below district level. So one has to find those areas which are reporting the consistent, or what we say, consistent malaria cases are coming from them. Now, those areas have to be tackled. That is one aspect. It is very important that the guidelines from the center, which are drafted by the National Center for Vector-Borne Disease Control, that is there in Delhi, are sent to the states, and states are trained into these aspects of implementing. That means the capacity building needs to take place all across the country so that they can implement all this.
Doctor, our risk for infectious diseases is increasing because of climate change. In case of malaria, how do these climatic conditions affect its spread, and what are the challenges they pose?
This is very important. The issue is, if you look at, in India, the malaria is not reported from the higher reaches. It's mainly the cases in the, you know, peninsular India and the northeastern states. Now, if, and during winters, definitely the malaria goes down. But with the change in the climatic factors, so the temperatures rising up, especially in the foothills and hills area, there can be possibility of malaria coming in these areas. That's one. Number two is, because of increase in temperature and decreasing of the winter time, there can be transmission which used to occur, so-called seasonal transmission, can become a perennial. When I say perennial, I mean the transmission can become all year round. Number two, it will mean a lot of financial resources as of now concentrating on the high malarious areas, and also looking if the newer areas comes, they will need a lot of resources to tackle these areas also. Number four is definitely the climatic factors, like we normally think, will lead to irregular rainfalls, floodings, movement of population, migration from one area to another. And all these lead to increase in malaria.
How important is hygiene and sanitation to build a malaria-free India, doctor?
You know, sanitation is very important in the sense is, if the sanitation is proper, when we say the disposal of the wastewater is good, then possible breeding of mosquitoes will not occur. That's one aspect. Coupled with this also is the personal hygiene. That means, when we're looking at living in high endemic areas, the personal hygiene would need to take prevention, personal individual preventions for malaria. For example, it is must that one can use full sleeve shirts, protect herself or himself from mosquito bites. They are equally important. When we talk about sanitation, we have been talking about so-called the Swachh Bharat Abhiyan, which does aim at all these aspects. The personal hygiene and sanitation will be very important for malaria elimination.
Thank you so much for an enlightening session. Doctors, I'm sure your insights have helped our listeners to understand how grave is malaria and how can we all contribute towards its prevention and elimination. That's it on the Banega Swasthya India podcast this week. If you have comments, queries or suggestions on the topic we discussed today or issues you would like us to cover in future, to write to us on bsipodcast@ndtv.com. Remember, BSI stands for Banega Swasthya India. You can also connect with us on Banega Swasthya India handles on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram and continue the conversation through the week. Till next week, this is Ambika Singh Kama signing off. Stay healthy and stay safe.